Welcome back to another episode of the Mitch Wallace podcast, where we interview guests of lived experience and subject matter experts to help you live a more mentally healthy life. Just before we jump into today's episode, I would ask if you are enjoying the show, please can you subscribe and ideally rate and review. It helps us a lot to get the message out there. And sincerely appreciate any feedback you can give, helping us change a billion lives, which is the ultimate mission. And today I'm joined by the one and only Cooper Chapman, a pro surfer turned mental health advocate that was prompted by his father's bout with depression and the suicide of two family friends. In 2020, he founded the Good Human Factory and has since run over 20,000 student and 2,000 corporate workshops. Helping people is Cooper's passion, and his mission is to provide his audience with the tools to continually grow and improve their quality of life through the power of story sharing, connection, and learning. He looks to inspire a positive and balanced life, focusing on gratitude, mindfulness, responsibility, kindness, and empathy. Cooper and I have a lot of shared values, and one of the things I took away most from our chat was just how raw, authentic, healthy discussion can create not only a bond, but also a sense of resilience in people, and that his genuine integrity and kind heart is not only good for other people, but good for him. And I think a big lesson there is that one of the best things we can do in mental health is to be of service to others. And I've always defined a good person by who you are when no one's looking. Today, we're going to allow you to look into the mind of Coops, and I hope that you are as inspired by his story as I was. So here we go. Coops, this is a long anticipated discussion. We've been talking back and forth on Instagram for a while and cheering each other on from the sidelines. Now we get to cheer each other on in person. What are you grateful for today?
Oh man, I guess just sitting here having this chat with you. We've been chatting for about an hour off air before we chatted, and I don't think there's many people on this planet, let alone in this country, that can probably relate to the journey that I've been on over the past couple of years, building a mental health organization a little bit different to the construct maybe of previous ones. And yourself and Hugh Van Kylenberg, as I was telling you off air, are two people who really inspire me. And I've been watching your journey and feel like you're a few years ahead of me, a couple of years older than me. And it's nice to have role models that not only you can look up to, but you can also have as your peers and who are willing to share and mentor. Like you said to me off air, you were keen to help me out along the way. So that's what I'm grateful for, just to be around people who are really open to helping each other and not see each other as competition, really be about collaboration. So that's what I'm grateful for right now.
Yeah, I will say my gratitude today is to be sitting with you, and also to be in the presence of someone that truly cares. That's one of the things I took away from our initial chat off air, finally meeting in person, is that you have an essence about you that there's good under there. You know, you've built the Good Human Factory, and there's the seed of intent is really, there's a lot of integrity, and it's beautiful to see that.
Nah, thank you, man. It's going to be exciting to share the story with your listeners, and I can't wait to have you on my podcast. I thought you would have come on mine before I came on yours, but that'll be coming shortly. I know. But man, it's going to be exciting to share with the listeners a bit more about my story, and I'm excited to hear the questions that you have for me.
Yeah, well, I want to start at, you know, you've spoken about before with your story, it's very often tied back to Chloe, your sister's friends, who...
Not my sister's friend, my younger sister, Sophia. Oh,
younger got three sisters. You have three sisters.
Yes.
So is your younger sister, what's her name?
Sophia. She was in year 12 at high school back in, I think it's 20, I always get the year wrong. I'm pretty sure it's 2018. She was in year 12 at high school, which is kind of the catalyst story of the Good Human Factory.
Right. So Sophia's friends passed away from suicide. Is that correct?
Yeah. In a fortnight, two friends. One, I remember it so clearly. We're sitting around the dinner table, like me and my family, as we did every night. And at the time, I'm traveling the world as a professional surfer, living this extraordinary life. And my younger sister, Sophia, says to us at dinner one night, oh, one of the boys in my year took his own life. And that's so hard to hear as like a young person, that there's other people in your community that are struggling so much that they do the unthinkable. And that kind of happened. I looked up some of the stats and I was like, wow, this mental illness thing is a big problem. But like most of us do, I kind of chucked up an Instagram story, threw a few platitudes, and life went on. And then 2 weeks later, we're sitting around the dinner table, exact same situation. Me, my three sisters, mum and dad, and Sophia says another boy took his own life. And that was kind of the catalyst of me being like, you know what, I can't sit around and just not do anything anymore. I've been lucky enough to learn some incredible lessons along my journey and have a burning curiosity for self-improvement and trying to take care of my own mental health based on family history of mental illness, and made it my kind of mission from that day to try and connect minds with simple mental health strategies.
So to that point, and by the way, I just want to honor and respect Sophia's, the loss of Sophia's friends and the impact that that had on them, their family, your family, and the ecosystem. And I'm a big fan of your approach to that, which is instead of burying our head, we try and make meaning from pain. But I also want to know about your pain. It's something maybe you talk less about than you do the inspiration of how you took from other people. When's the first time where you thought to yourself, I'm a little bit different, maybe that be more sensitive than other people, or have a burning desire to want to make sense of the world more than other people? Was there a moment in your childhood where you're like, something's a bit different about me?
I don't think that was a direct moment, but I just felt like I always had this curiosity out of fear. And you'll know this as someone who studied psychology. I lost an uncle when I was pretty young to suicide. I think I was about 5 or 6. And I remember watching my dad. I was playing like video games and he came and sat next to me. And it was the first time I really saw him cry and get visibly super upset when he explained what had happened. So I was exposed to mental illness and suicide from quite a young age. And then throughout my teen years, I sort of watched my dad at times suffer with his own mental health, from a bit of alcoholism to a bit of depression, wanting to see psychologists. But then I had the other side of the spectrum as well of my mum, how she'd been raised was kind of like, oh, get over it, you're a man. Like, so I saw my dad even struggle more because of that. So I understood that there's this sort of like landscape of mental illness. And because of that, I had this fear of like, I kept sort of hearing through my mum and different people like, oh, it's hereditary, it runs in the family. Like, my dad's brother lost his life, my dad suffers a bit, maybe this is going to happen to me. So out of that fear, I felt like I was always very curious. Okay, what little things can I maybe do for my mental health along my journey, with no intention of starting a business or anything, but just because I was like, I need to take care of myself. And then there was this moment, I remember it pretty clearly. I was in America for a surf comp, and I was about 20, 21. And at this time, I'm really struggling with my identity. If my results were low, I felt pretty low. And if my results are good, I felt good. Very unstable way to live when you're a professional athlete, but a very common way to live, to be honest. But I remember sitting there with my manager having Japanese this one time and just thinking in my head after I'd lost a few results, like, oh, maybe I'm depressed. Maybe I've got this family history of mental illness, and started to try and really upskill myself, and was kind of too scared to maybe go and see a psychologist. I was like, who am I to go and see a psychologist? I'm a top level athlete. I'm living this extraordinary life, traveling the world, getting paid to surf. Why? I can't go and see a psychologist. So because of that fear, I think I started to learn all these skills, and yeah, have been very lucky to kind of get through those difficult times and understand that there is so many amazing modalities and things that we can do for our mental health. And yeah, learned some great lessons. And then when my sister lost a second friend, I was just like, you know what, maybe I can teach these lessons to one or two people and help them out. And been lucky enough to teach a lot of people those lessons now. So it's been quite the journey. But yeah, that's kind of where that pain came from. And that fear, I think, is probably the word that I had mostly when it came to mental illness.
So almost a preventative approach, like you were getting ahead of it in case it ever came.
Well, I feel like it started to come. But then it was the fear of asking for help that led me to going, okay, if I'm not going to ask for help, then I need to do something myself. And that's where the education really started. A lot of self-development books, talking to my sports psychologist, which I feel like is a clear distinction. Like, when you're talking to the sports psychologist who works for the organization who's funding your career, Surfing Australia, it feels a little bit, I don't know, a bit janky sometimes to tell them your problems, which I did at times, but maybe not to the level that I would to a psychologist.
Have you ever hit rock bottom?
I don't think so. After seeing a lot of other people hit rock bottom, I think we all have a different rock bottom. And I think there's just those moments where you just change your path. And it's been a big journey of kind of just understanding who I am as a person, understanding my values. And I've been thinking about it actually quite a lot the last month or two, that I'm probably in the happiest I've ever been. And when I look back, I didn't realize that maybe I was unhappy. And I look back and think about different thoughts that I had throughout my early to mid 20s, where I'd be like, oh, far out, it would be nice to not wake up and have to deal with life tomorrow, which I didn't realize back then. And I didn't realize until recently that that's kind of, well, that's suicide ideation. Yeah. When you're kind of hoping or thinking like, oh, if this plane crashed, you know what? That would be a pretty good outcome. I've lived an amazing life. I don't have to deal with this constant stream of thoughts that are quite often unhealthy in my mind. And I haven't had that for like the last year or two. So I feel like that's kind of a good indication that I've not come away from what I'd say is rock bottom. I never planned anything. I never really had those. But I did have those thoughts quite often of like, oh, it would be nice if I didn't have to deal with this anymore.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think it's important in this space that we have an equal balance of people who get into mental health to make a difference, not just because they have experienced it themselves, but also that they've seen others experience it. Because unfortunately, unlike other industries, and I've done a lot of thinking about this, like most industries, you excel at it because you are naturally really passionate about it or good at it. So for example, and I'm not saying this is true for everyone, but a bodybuilder will probably become a great bodybuilder because they're born, they work out, they're like, I'm naturally bigger than a lot of people. I can put on muscle easier. This is just fluid and easy. I'm going to get jacked. Or a ballet dancer, they're like, I have a naturally good sense of rhythm. This is something I should probably keep doing, and they end up growing. I think when it comes to mental health, it's a very atypical developmental path in that most people get here because that's the thing they're worst at. You know, I'm really bad at being resilient. I'm really bad at not being anxious. I'm really bad at staying happy, but I'm going to devote my whole life to it and try and become a thought leader in it, which is against the natural grain of what my body is telling me to do and be. So unfortunately, the result of that, and I put myself in that camp, is that you can have people leading an industry and being the spearhead and figureheads for it, whilst also not having a predisposition for that to be their natural state. And so it can be like quicksand sometimes. I think it's really healthy and key to have people like you who are coming in, not saying that you haven't had your own experience, you just said that you have, but the kind of primary driver is the inspiration you've taken from seeing others suffer. So there's a stable base that you can always come back to in who Cooper is at his DNA. Would you agree with that, or what's your reflections?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what I'd notice, and you would as well, quite often in the mental health industry. A lot of speakers, a lot of people are coming from a place of like either a suicide survivor story or a really place of rock bottom. So they find it, they have amazing stories to share. But what I've noticed through sharing my story in the way that I do, not coming really from sharing even what I shared just before with you, it's more so about my sister's story, the skills I've learned. I've learned that a lot of people can relate to that, because quite often when somebody comes in with a really heavy story, they're so beautiful and so powerful, but then a lot of people find it really hard to relate, and it does leave that fear element of like, ooh, I don't want to deal with this. So I've seen my spot in the industry as a little bit different. I sort of look at myself as a mental health person, not a mental illness person. And I feel like 99% of the time you say to someone, hey, I work in mental health, they think, oh, mental illness, depression, anxiety, suicide. It's like, no, mental health is something that all of us have. So every one of us should be doing something to take care of it. So I think it's allowed me to sort of position myself in the industry in a little bit different of a place, more from like an education inspiration role, because I just didn't connect to speakers who came in and had those really heavy stories. That didn't really work for me. And it does for some people. And that's why it's so amazing to have so many great speakers in that space. But I think I've found a space that is really working for me. I'm getting great feedback that the way that I talk about mental health is having impact on a great audience as well. So I think there's space for all of us in the industry, but I think it's just trying to, refine your story in a way that can engage people, that people can relate to it and actually get some tangible outcomes from it.
What do you think it is about you that in the moment where extreme hardship came on the family, seeing your sister's friends in pain and probably seeing your sister in pain as a result of that, why did you choose to make that a thing and go toward it and be like, I'm going to try and help, when most people would just be like, I'm just going to brush that to the side and try and deal with it in other ways or not at all? What is it about you that made you want to do something?
I think the word's guilt. And I'll tell you why. Guilt that I just lived this, and I still was at the time living this extraordinary life. I'd always been like, what did I do to do? Obviously, I worked bloody hard. Don't get me wrong. Like, I know I worked super hard. I did a lot of things to give myself the opportunity. But I was also always in my head like, what have I done to deserve this life? I'm traveling the world, surfing with my mates, living this extraordinary life. But then I'd started to read a lot of books about different athletes who really struggled leaving their sport. They felt like they didn't have much purpose. Everything is always for you as an athlete or your coaches. Everyone around you is trying to help you achieve your goal. And I just started to read books and understand how a lot of people realized that there's sort of two mountains to climb. The first mountain is to climb that is about sort of doing stuff for yourself and becoming like the best you can be. And a lot of people climb that mountain and realize that there's not that much fulfillment at the top of it. And then they have to get to the bottom of the mountain and then climb this next one, which is for service and giving back. And I'd read a lot of books around that. And that was kind of where I was like, okay, I'm living a great life, but at times I'm not even that happy and I'm living this extraordinary life. Maybe dedicating my life to something that can maybe help people through my story can help me find that purpose. And that's, yeah, where that guilt, I think, is the word that where it was, where I was like, oh, there's kids in my local area that are struggling so much and I'm living this extraordinary life. Maybe I can help them a little bit. So that's, I think, where it came from.
Do you remember a time, maybe it was overseas while you were surfing, do you remember a moment where you were in this extremely amazing moment and then went, oh shit, I don't deserve this, or other people have it worse than me, and then it started to pull away at your happiness as opposed to like feed you?
I'm going to give you the flip of that, actually. There was a moment when I was in South Africa. So I lost all my sponsorship when I was about 23 or 24 and competed for 3 or 4 years working full time as a tradie, saving my money, $1,200 a week or whatever I'd make. I'd put it in the bank and then I'd fly to South Africa the next week and spend it all to get to the next comp. And I had this pretty toxic mindset for a year or two when I'd lost my sponsor of like, oh, there's all these guys who are rated below me in the world that are getting paid. And I felt like the world was against me. I had this crazy victim mindset. And then I went to this comp in South Africa this one day. And I remember it really clearly. I was sitting on the beach getting ready to paddle out, kind of already with a shit mindset to paddle out for this heat that, oh, this guy's getting paid more than me. I'm working full time. And then I had this realization. I remembered this thing that my dad would always say to me. He'd always say, appreciation, not expectation, Cooper. Appreciation, not expectation. And I remembered that when I was sitting on the beach and I was like, what are you doing, Cooper? Like, you've got the shittest mindset. Sure, there you could be getting more and getting sponsored and all of this, but look at the guys who are at home still digging holes, doing all the work that you were doing that you get to go away for 2 weeks and go surfing. Like, your life's pretty good. And we always compare across and up, which I think is good to have aspirations, but not that you compare across and down, but just start to like look around you a little bit more and go like, wow, my life is pretty good. So I think that was I kind of went off topic from the question, but
no, I love that answer.
I think that was just a moment where I was like, wait a second, I can choose the way that I view the world. I can always have more and bigger and better. But once I start to appreciate what I already have and realize, yeah, like I've got so many amazing opportunities, like don't feel bad about myself because I don't have more opportunities.
Appreciation, not expectation. Thank you, Papa Coops, for that wisdom. That is incredibly applicable to so many areas of life. And I know that gratitude is one of the core fundamentals of who you are and what good human factory is about. What in life now, with enough learning and time to take a pause, you said you're the happiest you've ever been. What do you think, as a macro theme, not just the micro moments, that you're most grateful for at the moment, over the last few years?
I think one that I've had this mindset for a few years, I speak to a lot of people and they're like, wow, you're so, not wise, like I don't want to blow smoke at my own ass, but I feel like a lot of people go like, oh, you view the world in a way that you're not swayed by, like you don't react to stuff. And I put it down to this fact that I've just started to look up to certain people around me who look happy, who look successful, and just pull little things out of their story. And that was one of the best lessons I got from my psych, was read other people's stories, through whether it be through books, through podcasts, listen to people's stories, but have an open mind. What can you get out of their story? What attributes do they have that maybe you can add to your life? And I think that was just a mindset that I really adopted. And I guess the biggest, from a macro level, mindset that I really changed, and I talk about this, is what my keynote's all about, is not basing my identity and my self-worth on my career and on my achievements, but on my values, how well I can live to those values each day. And that's probably been the biggest macro thing, to be like, I'm not my achievements. I'm the way I treat people. I'm the way I view the world. I'm the way that I treat myself, and just trying to actually live to those values. So I think on a macro level, that's been the biggest thing that changed. And that's been an evolution throughout my 20s, and it continues to evolve. And there's no finish line with it. It's just continuing to, I guess the way I say it is like, grow through life. Don't just go through life. Try and continually learn, find more, learn more, and life can continue to evolve and get better, rather than just be like, okay, this is my mindset, this is my beliefs, that's my life. It's like, no, we can always be challenged, evolve, be willing to get stuff wrong and learn from it. I think that's probably, from a macro level, the mindset and the, yeah, values and view on the world that I think has completely changed my life.
What's one belief system that you used to hold that you've now completely dropped and flipped on?
There's so many that I continually challenge, and I'm big on this at the moment with growing my business. Money is a big belief system that I'm learning through listening to other people. Like, we get so many of our beliefs from our family, and I'm so lucky. I've been so privileged with the upbringing that I had, but I have parents that have never built a business. I have parents that have never really been into investing. I have parents that have always been like, go get a job, do this, make your hourly rate. And now that I'm like evolving as a business owner and as an entrepreneur, I'm having to unlearn a lot of these blocks that my family have given me, and in no way their own. I'll give you a perfect example. Like, right now I've been talking to you about this prior. I'm in the midst of employing someone, and I talked to my dad about it, and he's like, oh, that sounds like far out. Just a reaction to him, and nothing against him. He's just never had to employ people, so he sees it as his big challenge. So in my mind, I'm having to relearn these beliefs and be like, no, this isn't a challenge. It's an opportunity. If I want to grow my business from where it is now to anything bigger, I have to take these steps. But this self-belief of like, oh, this is going to be a big challenge because of what I've been taught, what I've been grown up around, is, yeah, just trying to relearn these models and these self-beliefs around money, around business that I've had through my upbringing. So the awareness, I think, is the first step with that, which I'm very lucky that I've got. Mm. And now it's, okay, how do I remold those self-beliefs and, yeah, continue to grow?
And so where did that net out to with the money and the belief system that money is not evil and that challenges aren't necessarily bad, that opportunities and money can both be positive things? And that's something that I'd like to attract in order to be able to help more people. Is that,
yeah,
kind of
I think it's just understanding that like money can create more opportunities to help more people, and it's not that scary. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of people out there who employ a lot of people. Like, it's just because this micro belief of my dad and my family of like, oh, it's hard to grow and build a business because he hasn't done it before. But there's thousands, millions of case studies of people growing very successful businesses. So I just need to, yeah, just change those views and understand that other people are doing it in other ways, and to look at them for advice in that realm and look at my dad for advice as being a dad. So it's like just understanding that you can learn stuff from everyone and just having a really open mind, I think.
And you know what I love in that example is you talked about your dad and learnt from him, not necessarily directly in the way that you would like to be, as in fear money or fear challenges, but learnt from how you want to shift from that to somewhere else. You want to be open-minded and maybe not limited, but whilst also not being a victim nor blaming your dad for being who he is. And I think that comes with age and maturity, and you said your friends describe you as wise, and I can see that. It's micro instances like that where you're not holding anger and resentment towards people that mentor you because they should be X. I wish you were more like this for me. You seem to be like, oh, this is you, great, how can I love you the way that you are and learn from the things that you do in the way that I want to go view the world. And I was interviewed by Lad Bible this week, and they said, what's one of the main things you learn from your parents? And I said that they will fall from the throne and no longer be God. And I think that's a really important moment from childhood to adulthood psychologically, is like, oh, this whole time you've been human. It's like the veil gets pulled.
It's crazy, yeah. I'm starting to learn that
now.
Oh,
like, you were this Disney character, this, you know, be all end all protector, and you knew everything. Yeah. Everything you did was perfect. And actually, the greatest lesson isn't necessarily what they did, but how what they did affected you and how then you choose to respond to those learnings. And it sounds like you have this beautiful dynamic with everyone in your family where everyone's allowed to be themselves, but you learn from the parts you like and maybe don't resonate with so much, but either way, there's growth.
Absolutely. I just feel like so many people get so like attached and want to like judge people, and it's like, you don't know what they're going through, you don't know like why they're reacting the way they are. Like, just have empathy for everyone and just be like, you know what? I don't know your story, you're acting the way you are for the way you are, and that's okay.
What is the you mentioned before about values, and I love that, because I would say that living values orientated for me is more important than any other thing. What are two values or character traits of Coops that you're really proud to say, this is part of me?
I'll give you three. I speak about five normally, but I'll give you three because I did a workshop last week, and this ties really well. I did a workshop called Be Kind to the Environment that we're piloting. We did like doing all regional towns, but these three, I think, are the three that I'm going to dial into from my hour keynote into 30, because I think these three come together really well. So the first one's mindfulness. And I start with mindfulness because we need awareness. We need to actually notice what's going on around us. So many of us are just living up in our head. We're not actually connecting to our senses. So it's like, okay, am I taking time each day to focus on what I can see, what I can hear, what I can feel, sitting and meditating, doing breath work? All these awareness sort of exercises I think are so important, because so many of us are so up in our head. It's like, no, we need to actually feel what we're feeling, see what we're seeing, and understand like what's going on. So mindfulness is a value that I hold very dearly, trying to be present with people. Like, there's so many great things that come from mindfulness. So that's step one, awareness. Step two, gratitude, appreciation. Once we're aware of things, then we can be more grateful for them. We can actually be like, oh yeah, wow, there is all these amazing things going on around my life. Gratitude, it starts to change our brain chemistry. It releases serotonin, oxytocin. So step one, awareness, mindfulness value. Step two, appreciation, gratitude value. And step three, I think, is action, and that's kindness, and understanding that kindness is a value. That all the science leads to kinder people are happier people. We all want to be happier. So now there's all this data that comes to show that people are willing to do kind things for others, do kind things for themselves, do kind things for the environment, rate higher on happiness tests. So they're the three steps. Awareness comes with mindfulness, appreciation comes with gratitude, and then action comes with kindness. So I think there are easy three takeaways that align actions and reasons behind the values as well.
I love that, because that's a really juicy soundbite for listeners to be able to hold on to something around tools that they can apply and prioritize after listening to this, to say, okay, yeah, that is true. If I build a mindfulness practice and then bolt into that a gratitude practice, and then bolt into that a awareness and proactivity around some kindness, I'm going to see mental health benefits from that. What I really wanted to know from that question is, what part of you are you most proud of? Not tools, not coping, not healing, not going anywhere. When you sit down and be like, I like who I am, why?
I think because I'm kind. I think it's something that I pride myself on. I'm watching the evolution of myself, because me as a 25-year-old surfer, even say 5 years ago before I started the Good Human Factory, the Good Human Factory has been a huge accountability thing for myself to be a good human. It's been accidentally, I didn't even come up with the name, but because of it, I've felt this, I need to try and like be kind to people, just be nice to people. So I think kindness is something that I'm super proud of. But then the other thing that I'm proud of with what I've done is the consistency. Like, I haven't missed two podcasts a week for 18 months. I do all the editing, I do it all myself. I haven't missed a day for 2 years of my 1% club. So I think consistency is something I'm proud of. It's something as you'd know, with podcasting and with building a business, most fail because people aren't willing to stick out the hard yards. But I think because my why with the Good Human Factory has been so strong, I've never looked back. I've never thought this isn't going to work. I'm like, there's no destination. As long as I'm walking in the right direction, then it's all good. And I feel like I've been walking in the right direction for the sort of person I want to be at the moment.
It's funny, bro. I get to speak to a lot of people in doing what I do and get exposed to some incredible business leaders and entrepreneurs and people with a lot of big hearts and good ideas. There's something that you have, which is that special sauce. I don't know what it is. It's some of the things that you've said in the last couple of hours we've been hanging out is mindsets like, I will show up even when it's fucking hard. I will show up even when I can't see progress. I will not look back. This is my reason for being. Like, they're the types of almost obsessive level mindsets that differentiate people who succeed and don't. Mm. And that's why I'm convinced that you're going to succeed in whatever you put your mind to. And I can't wait to continue to celebrate you. What is a fear that you hold that you probably wouldn't share to most people that you're going to share with me right now, that is kind of going to role model a little bit of vulnerability?
What's a fear? I guess it kind of comes off the back of imposter syndrome. Like, I fear I'm going to get exposed one day that I'm not this mental health guy that people think. Like, I'm so lucky. I haven't had To be honest, I reckon I might have had like one or two testimonials from students out of 20,000 that have said like, I didn't like it. So the evidence is there to not be fearful that like I'm genuine, but I just am fearful that people are going to try and call me out for not being genuine. That's a big one. And as well, and I sometimes talk about this as a fear, so it's maybe not a private one, but just I'm fearful of not reaching my potential. So many people have interesting fears, but I feel like not reaching your potential is... yeah, a fear that I have. And then as well, kind of going back to the first one, another fear is just not being genuine and getting a big head and the business growing and becoming something that's my ego can't handle. But I feel like I'm in a pretty good space to not let any of those fears really creep in. But there are a couple that I sort of juggle with all the time, like the imposter syndrome. They're getting exposed for something I'm not, even though I've got the evidence that I am. And then also, yeah, like not reaching that potential and or reaching the potential and then getting an ego to come with it, which, yeah, I don't want.
All good self-awareness. I found someone similar to you around authenticity being a massive value. Two ways that I've used to overcome that. One is expose myself first. So if I ever feel like I'm building a veneer of something that's not actually true, I'm going to call myself out on it as publicly as I possibly can. So if people are giving me feedback, oh, you're so this and like, da, 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 and I'm like, that doesn't feel true. I'll intentionally make a video or a podcast where I'm like, just to be clear, you know, and even you saw me downstairs vaping before. And so I'm having a nicotine vape some people who would walk up to me and see me outside would be like, but you're in mental health, you're the health guy wanting to be poster child of like authentic thriving lifestyles. And I'm like, yep, I'm not the poster child of being a saint. I'm not the poster child of having perfect mental physical, mental, or any other types of things. I am someone who advocates for authenticity, connection, and resilience, and above all being a kind, good person. So I often run this test in my life where I'm like, if someone bumped into me in the escalators as I was landing at LA airport, or my best friend of 20 years, or someone I just trained in a workshop, I hope they would have pretty consistent explanations if they were ever to be asked who is Mitch. And that I would also agree that that's who I am and that's who I'm trying to live by. So that's one thing. The other thing is, if you don't want to call yourself out on it publicly, it probably means you're not living towards your values. So how do you change that behavior? So that, like, that's the kind of the test.
Yeah.
Could I say this on a podcast? If not, it's probably not something I should be doing. But if you rip it, man, everyone's got something to be exposed for at the end of the day. And there's going to be haters, and that doesn't, I still believe in you as much as I did 10 minutes ago and will continuously. What is someone who would get close to you? What's something that, let me say that another way. You're in a relationship at the moment with a lovely Brazilian girl.
Yeah.
What do you think's the hardest part about dating you?
I don't stop talking about work. It's something we're like working on, and our relationship is amazing. Don't get me wrong. We're big on communication, but we have like a rule before and after. Before 7 a.m., no work. After 7 a.m., no work. I mean, 7 p.m., no work talk. Probably do that too much. That's something that, yeah, it's obviously so exciting. We're the main character of our own story always. Yeah. And I forget that she's living her individual life and building her thing. So just trying to have a bit more like two-way communication is something that I feel like we're getting better at, but it's something that's needed to be brought to my attention by her. So yeah, I think that's something that we're definitely working on.
What do you think blokes can get better at in regard to romantic relationships, particularly heterosexual romantic relationships, where we're scared of potentially being less masculine, quote unquote, but actually the result of that is diminishing connection potential? What are you mistakes that you see guys around you make a lot that you're like, fuck, I wish we would be more like this instead?
I think just communication. That's something I've learned so much with my partner now. She's got like a rule she got out of a long-term toxic relationship a few years back and didn't really want a relationship or anything. And she's just made a rule, like if something's going on, instead of building up and resenting, we talk about it. We sit down every night and you can feel when your partner like wants to say something if it doesn't and holds on. Like, so we're just all about like letting it out, talking about it and actually being open with stuff. And it's been monumental in my relationship, learning how to actually look into each other's eyes and actually ask what, like ask the questions that you want to ask. Like, as uncomfortable as it can feel sometimes, it's like it's all growth. So that's been a huge one with us, like trying to actually communicate. Like, we have a board at home that says full potential and we have like 12 different things that we have to do each day, and we don't get do them all each day, and that kind of means we reach our full potential. And on one of those ticks is communication with each other. I think as a relationship, people don't work on the relationship, but a relationship's like anything, it takes work. We can get better at it by communicating better, by listening more, by asking, oh yeah, what's actually going on, like how are you feeling, like having that communication. And that's something that I've really been working on. And yeah, that full potential thing's been epic. But having, yeah, okay, we need to tick, we've had communication today. And you'll see no communication for a few days of actual sitting down having a proper connection is detrimental to your overall well-being, but also the relationship as a whole.
Why do you think so many people find it hard to sit in the space of open, honest communication?
Because they're scared of judgment. They're scared that it's not going to live up to what they hope the person thinks of them. But if it's your truth, then it's going to be in your head anyway. So it's like when we don't communicate our truth, it creates a false identity for who we are in the person's head anyway. So it's like if you resent someone continually because they're doing something that you haven't even told them that you don't like them doing, it's like how can you expect someone to improve? So I think the first thing is being able to take criticism yourself and have the humility when your partner points out something, instead of biting and having an excuse, going, okay, where's the truth in this for them telling me that? Okay, I'm going to try and improve on that. And vice versa, then if you bring something up to them, you can expect them to be able to take it on as well. So it starts with us, where so often you see people break up from a relationship with somebody and go, oh, they were like this, oh, like that. They date someone else, they break up with them as well, they make the same complaints. It's like, yeah, you're the common denominator here. What are you doing? What are you doing to improve your communication skills? What are you doing to improve the sort of person you are? And that's when we start to build the relationships that we actually truly want. They come from us having that reflection of, okay, what am I doing wrong as well? And that's something that I feel like both my partner and I are really working on, is having honest conversations about our flaws and being humble enough that when they bring something up that they want us to improve, going, okay, where's the truth in it? Okay, how can I improve here?
Yeah, sitting with the truth can be very confronting. I think for a lot of people who maybe haven't done the mindfulness work or the gratitude work or the kindness work, when any type of there's a disagreement or a splinter in a relationship and someone tries to air that, the initial response is get defensive because it brings up shame, guilt, blah, blah, blah. And that auto triggers this spewing out or projection. And so many relationships break apart because of a moment that if all you did is let that land for a second and say, okay, thank you for telling me. Like, how often do you think people are going to communicate with you if every single time they try and do that, they're made to feel shut down straight away because you can't handle any type of shame or guilt or anything like that. So, you know, I'm a big believer that communication doesn't just get good at having the willingness to speak up when you're not okay. That's the scary part, quote unquote. But what's actually also just as scary is if you're supporting someone through a hard time or if you're hearing feedback come your way, it's petrifying just to let that land for a second and maybe consider the truth that might sit behind there somewhere. That's fucking courageous if you ask me.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the difference between people who last the short and the long term is not biting back just because something hurts.
Yeah, it's like the amount of times that someone might come to you and be in a bad place and upset, and then they somewhat say that you're part of the reason, and it's so hard to sometimes be like, okay, shit, maybe I need to change. Most people will like deflect and lose a friendship over it. It's like, okay, how can I get better? And that's the thing with relationships. At the end of the day, like, you have the same end goal of like being in a loving, happy relationship. So if you're bringing that up to someone, it's like, hey, this is going to improve their relationship. It's like, okay, we're on the same team. We're always on the same team when you're in a relationship, but people are just fighting each other. It's like, no, how do you come to a common ground and work on a way to just be in a happy, healthy relationship? And as hard as the conversations are sometimes, it's like, choose your heart. It's like, do you want the hard conversation or do you want the hard relationship and life of resentment in your head and playing these stories and I wonder if they're actually doing that or that? It's like, no, let's actually communicate.
Choose your heart. Yeah, I'm a huge believer in that. And that comes back to a theme that seems to be going through our conversation, which is being values driven. What are some of the things that you think students, as being surrounded by thousands of students every year and having a full-time job with the Good Human Factory that delivers these workshops, you're an accomplished keynote speaker, you would have a pretty good pulse for the temperature of mental health in young people. What's the two biggest things you think young people are struggling with at the moment?
I think connection's one thing. Obviously, we're obviously more connected than ever, but I think something that I've really seen and something that seems different now to even when we were at school was you used to finish school and you could go home and you could escape it. You know, you could be like, all right, even if there's a bunch of shit going on at school and you don't really like being there, you could go home. And obviously, some people, this is very... how do you explain this? It's not a one size fits all, but as a whole, you could generally leave school, escape it. For me, I'd go to the beach, blah, blah, blah. Nowadays, kids all take their phone home. They're on Snapchat, they're on Facebook, they're on Instagram until all hours of the night. So I think it's hard to escape the problem. So I think teaching better, like educating students a bit more around like devices and how we should be disconnecting from stuff is super important. So I think that's one that's a pretty obvious one that you hear through the media, you hear through parents, teachers, like, oh, we need to get a reel in of the device usage. And then I think just the lack of education in topics that are important at school, in topics around emotional well-being, in topics around building your finances, in topics around grief, in all the, like, doing your taxes. Like, we're missing all of these things that end up, like, you work in mental health, obviously. So you'd see quite often, massive one is finances. So many people don't know how to actually deal with their finances. So many people don't know how to deal with their grief because we don't get taught all of these things. So I just think the school system needs to have a big shake-up soon. I think we're training and educating kids for a reason that isn't actually giving them outcomes to take care of themselves when they leave school. It's all about, yeah, creating, like, so many of the subjects that you go in and they're like, why are we learning this? Like, I've never used it ever. And it's funny, being a keynote speaker at schools quite often, so many times they're like, oh, sorry, our schedule's too busy for that right now. And it's like, what could be more important than a student's mental health?
Anyone's mental health, exactly. Particularly a young person. The device thing's an interesting one because I hear it talked about a lot. You know it, I know it, everyone knows the screen time is bad. The loneliness research will tell us that we are hyper-connected but never more lonely. Mm. The highest at-risk age bracket is people below the age of 19. Something's not working, but I think where the rubber meets the road is why we're not getting any improvement. Because, like, so what are we supposed to coach them on? Like, what tactics work? What's the right amount of time? How do we try and get that message through them without them being arbitraged down as uncool, and then everyone competes on them being out of the know, and then they get bullied for that? Like, how do we solve this problem? Massive question, but any insight you have.
If I knew, I'd be a billionaire, yeah, right? Yeah. But no, I think a lot of it just comes back to education, and sort of one of the things that I talk about with social media when I do my keynote is just saying to people, like, nobody follow, and the thing that sucks now is the algorithm. Even if you don't follow accounts, you still get fed stuff. So this kind of goes a little bit against what I'm going to say, but we make a choice for who we follow. Mm. We're the only one who has that responsibility. You're the one who clicks follow and unfollow. Do it consciously. Are you following accounts that are educating you, that are inspiring you, that are motivating you? Or are you following accounts that you kind of compare yourself against and judge yourself and go, I wish my life was like theirs? Like, and it just comes back to awareness. Once again, it's like that mindfulness, gratitude and kindness thing. Once we start going like, okay, am I being conscious of my choices each day? And am I taking responsibility for my actions? That's a quote that I love from a movie or a book called The Peaceful Warrior. And it's so true. Like, are we being conscious of our choices each day? And are we taking responsibility for our actions? And so many of us are drifting through so many choices all day unconsciously, me included. But it's like, once we start to really take that into our own hands and saying to kids, like, just be conscious when you're on social media. Like, we have a choice each day when we click play on Netflix. Are you watching a documentary? Are you watching a show? Are you watching... And once again, I'm not perfect. I watch plenty of entertaining stuff, but I really try and balance it with educating, motivating, inspiring stuff, because that's the sort of life that I want to lead.
Yeah. The takeout, what I just got from you just then, is instead of trying to stop screens, let's maximize its potential in a good way. And I know for, you know, I have a younger sister who's in her teens, and I would agree that if I told her, hey, can you put the phone down for an hour, or can you, if my parents told her, no phone after 10 or whatever, she'd be like, no. But maybe if I said to her, hey, there's this really cool video on YouTube that would be great for you to watch for an hour, it would mean a lot to me and you could understand me more, and it had to do with mental health and education, then I'm like, okay, yes. And I think about our platforms, you know, Good Human, Heart on My Sleeve, etc. We can thank the connected ecosystem that we live in for the impact that we've had.
Mm.
You know, without that, it'd be almost impossible to do what we do. And so I do agree, it's a weapon and we need to educate people in using that weapon well, as opposed to it turning on us and harming us.
And I think just the education around it and the awareness of what's going on in the context of tech right now. Like I read Johan Hari's book, Stolen Focus. Have you read that?
No.
Have you read Lost Connections?
Yeah.
Favorite book of all time, that
really
book. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. That was a big eye-opener for me. But anyway, he has another one called Stolen Focus, where it goes on to talk about all the tricks and stuff that all the tech companies are using to steal our focus. So I think once you have the awareness of that, then you can start taking a bit more control, because so many of us don't even realize what's going on with the algorithm, don't even realize what's going on with all this security and data collection of everything we do. Like, it's scary, but once you at least have the awareness, then you can make informed decisions. Whereas, so it's like, go watch the doco on Netflix. What's it called? The Social Dilemma. Is it social? Yeah. Just educate and be aware of this stuff. And it's not going to say, like, I've watched all this stuff and I know all the information. I still have a silly amount of screen time. But at least I have the awareness of it. And it's like, okay, I'm making some dedicated decisions each day to take a bit of control back in my own hands.
Do you compare yourself to people online?
Always.
Do you compare yourself to people in your family?
Yeah.
Because it's funny. I could imagine your sister. I don't know your other sisters. I hope one day I get the privilege of meeting your family. I know of Chloe because she is a model, and her husband is Fisher, one of the biggest DJs in the world now, which has kind of been a meteoric rise to fame in the last 24 months in some ways. Crazy, right? Crazy. He's headlining the biggest clubs in the world, biggest festivals in the world. His song is known by, you know, you could pretty much go to any country, play that song, and they'd be like, I'm losing it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Do you feel an expectation to be something more or enough because you're surrounded by people who are quote unquote successful?
It's a great question. It's funny, I bring this up sometimes. Like, I have a pretty successful podcast. I'm getting close to 1 million downloads, but I don't even have the biggest podcast in my family. So it's like, I heard Bronte, one of the swimmers was on Hugh Van Kahlenberg's podcast, and she was talking about she got silver in the Olympics, but she got, her sister got gold. So she's like, second best in the world, but second best in my family.
Yeah.
So that's like something I think about sometimes, but I'm like, I'm just so proud of them now. I'm like, far out. There's so many people that I can compete against that it's just like, I'm just proud of what they've achieved. Like, it just shows me what's possible. That's something that's really cool. Like, I've always wanted to be hyper successful, whether it be financially, impact. And now watching what Fish is doing and understanding that we all have our place in the world. And that's something that I'm really starting to learn. Like, going like, oh, I want to get big and successful. Like, I had somebody write, because I just went and spent a month with Fisher and my sister in Europe and partied and had the wildest time ever, private jets, super yachts. It was crazy.
Wow.
And then I had somebody message me after going, like, based on the work that I do, someone who's a friend of mine, going like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if Fisher actually used his audience and his impact to do something good? And I sat there for a minute without responding to this person and like wanting to go like, yeah, it would be cool. But then I was like, no, wait a second. He's making millions of people happy every day with his music, with his energy, with what he does. That's great for people's mental health. He's making a massive impact. That's his place. And it's amazing. I love it. I watch it, and it's just like something I'm so inspired and proud of, to be honest.
Mm.
The way that he holds himself and treats everyone around him, it's beautiful. But that's his place. And then what I'm doing is like my place now. And it's taken me a few years with what I'm building with the Good Human Factory to sort of step out of this like pro surfer ego, like, oh, the goal is being a top level athlete is obviously to win events, but also to build a profile and have influence. Whereas now the work that I'm doing, I'm like, oh, I don't want the image. But it's actually grown to the point where way more people stop me now and go, I love your podcast, I love the Good Human Factory. And it's kind of cool to like see that I'm creating my own thing, and it doesn't need to grow it. Like, once again, going back to what I said before, like, I don't feel like there's a destination. I'm just walking in this direction now that's helping people. And it's like, okay, I'm not trying to compete against anyone. I feel like I'm creating a whole new business and organization that doesn't really, there's obviously things that are similar like yours and Hugh with the Resilience Project, but I'm doing my own thing. So it's like, I'm not trying to compare to anyone. I'll get inspired by people, but I don't really try and compare to anyone anymore.
There's enough people out there that need help, man.
Yeah.
But unfortunately the pie is growing. So, yeah, but it is within our brain to just constantly compare. I'm guilty of it. We all are. And when you have not just high performing people that you follow online, but high performing people in your bloodline and in your family, it's, I can imagine sometimes that would be equal parts inspiring and also, yeah, maybe deflating if you let it be. But you strike me as someone who chooses the other lens on that, which is how amazing for them. And we can all win and be happy together.
But it's just like, it's defining what success is. Is success making a lot of money? Is success making a lot of impact? Like my other two sisters, my younger sisters are amazing. It's like, do they look at me and go, wow, Cooper's got a big profile and a big impact? But like one of my younger sisters, Sophia, she's a primary school teacher. Amazing, giving back, teaching people.
Absolutely.
And then Olivia, my other sister's a nurse in intensive care in Royal North Shore, wow, helping people, doing amazing stuff. So it's like, define what success is, really. Like, I'm sure my parents are so proud of all four of us in our own chosen paths. It's just about like not comparing. Like, comparison's the thief of joy. It's like, if you're comparing, why? And we always compare across and up, like I touched on before. It's like, let's compare across and down in the context of what we see as success and go, okay, a lot of us are a lot more successful. It's good to strive and have goals, but when you anchor your happiness around that, then it's a recipe for disaster.
Agree. And building the mindsets to be able to overcome that is key. And I am fascinated with anyone's coping tactics for mental health, particularly... just one of super high performers. I want to understand how high performers operate. I think my passion is for people who are in a lot of pain regardless of their performance, but just as like a pure interest level. And whether that be you or but even if you look at someone like Fisher, who's traveling and not sleeping a lot, I would imagine, and playing till 5-6 a.m. how does someone like that maintain their mental health?
He's a unique specimen, Fisher. Yeah. He ice baths every day. He's very curious about taking care of his health. Absolutely. But just some people are built different. He's so built for what he's doing. It's crazy.
Really?
Like he plays 3-4 nights a week, like you said, till 3-4 a.m. But then it's like, doesn't drink that much. Every now and then we'll have like a tequila shot just to sort of like pep him up. But other than that, like he's not drinking and partying when he's DJing ever, except for maybe every now and then when the family's there, or we do like special ones that we're there, he'll have like a bit of a night, but not really. He's pretty balanced with that. And
isn't
then he'll like,
funny?
Yeah,
he looks like an absolute.
He plays it very well because his personality is literally loose.
Is that
Aussie
what, what you see is what you get?
Absolutely. He's like that, whether you're at a family Christmas where no one's drinking or whether you're watching him DJ. He's just, I've never seen anything like it. The way that he, and I'm so proud of him, like he could have gone one way and got this crazy ego with like the crazy growth that he got, which maybe at times through his surfing career, he somewhat did. He used to bully me quite a bit and it was like the older brother I never had. But now since I have built what I've built, I feel like this last trip to Europe, there was just so much mutual respect with what we do. Like he was really nice to me and real supportive, and because he's at this level now, he's just like, he's even tripping. You look at him and he's just like, mate, this is ridiculous. But going off the mental health thing, I asked him when he was at home over Christmas last year, I was like, oh, how stoked are you to have a bit of time off? And he was like, mate, I can't wait to get back. I fucking love it. I get my energy from it. Like energy creates energy. So he like, you've never seen anything like it. He'll be DJing and have a crew of 20 of our friends, family, whoever behind the decks. And he'll turn around and give every single person the same amount of energy as he gives the crowd. He's just like this person that, yeah, brings energy to people's lives. That's just his gift. And he does it through obviously music, but also through his content. And yeah, some people just get their energy through that. And I think as well, he has that mindset of like, COVID slowed everything down, make it happen while the sun's shining. Right now his growth, he's just like foot to the floor. So yeah, he definitely has his practices and isn't just like, oh, he like trains, he does ice baths, he's really conscious of it all. But yeah, he just gets his energy through it. So it's cool to see that we all do it all differently.
Yeah, being in your passion, I think, is something that is this circular energetic loop. It gives you, you give a lot to it, but it'll give back so much more. And we're both in that position, thank God. Long may that last. So as we kind of start to bring this home, I've stolen this question off someone. I just really like asking it. Imagine we replace Fisher's billboard poster in Ibiza with Cooper's poster. And I don't ask it in this way. It's just a billboard question.
Yeah.
And you get to write a certain sentence on that billboard for every single person to read. What is the message you put on that billboard?
I don't know if I go like my marketing brain or my mental health brain. From someone who owns a business.
Not look up good human factor.
Yeah. It's like, ooh, do I use it? Is it free? No. What would I teach people? I think like a big tagline of what a lot of my merch says is just like, what are you grateful for? I like to inspire people to think. I want people to not be the billboard about me. It's about them. It's like, okay, what are you grateful for? You might have however many people read it, and it might spark something in somebody's head to start, oh yeah, thinking about something good in their life rather than something bad in their life. And that's what I'd probably put on there. What are you grateful for? And have a picture that maybe incites people to actually reflect and take action.
I was in the Goldie last Sunday and or in Kingscliff. I had to fly into Gold Coast Airport, and the moment I got into the airport, there was a Good Human jumper there, and I just had a moment of pride, and I was like, oh, I'm speaking to Coops next week, and I want to let him know that, you know, something that was once in your head as a potential maybe is now being worn on people's backs out there in the wild and is generating conversations on a daily basis. And I think that's very, very cool, man.
Yeah, the merch stuff's cool. It's cool when you see someone wearing your stuff. It's like you see someone in the wild. It's like I always get sent messages, people going like, oh, so someone wearing your stuff. Jumper. It's like obviously growing now to the point where I've sold a couple thousand hoodies and shirts and starting to get people out there wearing it, which is really cool. And the special thing is it's not about... obviously like it's a way to make money for the business, but it's like such a great impact piece. Like I'll give you a story. I got this amazing lesson from the universe or message from the universe about that the merch was a worthy thing to do. The very first day I ever got my first box of sample, or my first box of, I think I bought like 50 that said be kind to your mind across the chest. That's kind of my tagline for a long time. And I was wearing it to the snow for the first day I've ever worn it. I never promoted, hadn't even put a story up about it. And I was at McDonald's at like Goulburn on the way down, and I was sitting there having Maccas, and this guy kept looking over to us with his family. And then he came over at the end of his meal and was like, oh, hey, how you going? Like, my son noticed you and your friend Alex Hayes from social media, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, hey, you going? Nice to meet you. And then I had the shirt on, and he said, oh, where'd you get that shirt? And I was like, oh, it's actually mine. It's the first day I've ever worn it. I'm about to start. Yeah, it's a sample. It just says, be kind to your mind. And he said, I just want to let you know I've suffered quite a lot with mental illness over the last couple of years, and I really needed to read that message today. So thank you so much. And I was like, wow, if that's not a sign, that's a true word of a story. The day that I first wore any of my merch. So knowing that it can have that impact, just anecdotally myself in the first instance, that I just know there's been thousands of people that have had that or similar interactions from wearing a piece of my merch, which is beautiful. Like my manager, who does a bunch of my social media stuff, she has a few of my bits of merch, and she's like, I love putting on the what are you grateful for, because even if I don't have somebody come up to me, I know when I put it on, I'm like this lighthouse. If people walk past, and it makes their day a little bit better. So it makes me feel good that I wear it, even if nobody comes up to me. So it's like those moments that I'm like so proud to know that the merch is a real impact piece.
Love that. And for people that want to get involved or follow your story, they can look you personally up, Cooper Chapman, online. But what about Good Human Factory? Who's the types of people you work with, schools and workplaces?
Yeah, I mean, a big one is high schools are probably like, I mean, for a long time, it was about 80-20 high school to corporate keynotes. It's probably more 60-40 now. There's a lot more corporate starting to see value in the work that I do. And I love doing my school stuff. But yeah, if you want to learn more about the Good Human Factory, just check out the website, thegoodhumanfactory.com. You can check out the About page, learn a bit more about the whole business. You can check out the workshops and learn more about the corporate and high school workshops. Obviously, I have a podcast as well. That's something that I do put a lot of time and energy into, which you will be a guest on very shortly. The merch, there's community stuff over on Instagram. It's a really cool place to check out what we do, just at The Good Human Factory. But yeah, always evolving, lots of exciting times ahead, a lot of growth coming up, a bit of restructuring and trying to really put some time and energy into some projects that I've been thinking about for a while, but haven't had the flexibility to do it while I've been trying to get everything flowing, but it's flowing now, which is nice. So yeah, next stage is exciting. Tuned.
And usually this is my last question, but I'm going to have two more questions. Second last question. What is a question you wish I'd asked you, but I didn't?
What's your favorite quote?
The truth will set you free.
No, that was a question. What's a question that I didn't ask you?
As you look straight into my eyes, it's just so, I'm so obsessed with that quote. I thought you were asking me. I just defaulted to wanting to explain that. And also,
there you go, because it's a great question. We all want to answer
I just
that
gave away my question three, which was, what question would you want to ask me? All right, fuck, we're not doing the last question. That's done. So what's your favorite quote, Coops?
I just think quotes are such a good, like, God, for me, they just sort of sit at the back of my head as like a little accountability buddies. And I've got many, but because you said, what's your favorite? I'm going to give you one that I've been really tying into a lot of my workshops recently. And it's just a huge accountability one for me. And it goes, knowledge is knowing, wisdom is doing. A lot of us are so knowledgeable. We know how much sleep we should get. We know how much exercise we should be doing each day. We know how much water we should drink. We know we should be eating nutritious foods. We know we should be communicating with our friends. But are you actually doing it? And that's, I fail with all this stuff all the time too. But I think that quote of being like, come on, mate, you're knowledgeable, but are you wise? And I think being wise is super important. So I think that quote of like, knowledge is knowing, wisdom is doing. And I love sharing that in my workshops because I talk about stuff that's not that advanced. Gratitude, kindness, mindfulness. All of us know about it, but are you doing it? So I think it ties in nicely with everyone can have that quote and be like, oh yeah, we all know a lot of healthy things to do, but actually do it.
I think that's a beautiful place to leave it, because for me, the most important thing that we need in the mental health space right now is more action. We have so much awareness.
Yeah.
You know, everyone knows big problem, lots of people dying, lots of people struggling, and also, to your point earlier, not just from a mental illness lens, but everyone wanting to be a bit better every day.
Yeah.
And the hardest part is to then translate that to behavior. It's easy to raise awareness. It's easy to put up a post on socials. It is hard when the moment comes to do what you did with your podcast 2 a week for, what is it, a year and a half. It is your gratitude every morning and every night. It is sticking to those micro moments that will end up making you who you are. And I think society needs to stick to those micro moments. Now that we know better, let's do better.
And that's why I'm so passionate about the angle that I take. It's like, how do we, instead of really helping, obviously we need the help for the 20% with the mental illness, but it's like, how do we increase the skills, increase the understanding of mental health for the 80% who don't have a mental illness and grow that to 83%. Hey, that makes the 20% smaller as well. But it's like, if we can educate, inspire, and really motivate that 80% to develop more skills to understand themselves better, that's going to grow to a bigger number, and then our mental illness is going to shrink, and it's going to inspire the people who do have a mental illness to pick up the skills anyway. They benefit from it too. So it's not, it's 100% sort of approach rather than really just focusing where 99% of the mental health industry's funding and awareness is really towards that 20%, which is so important. But I think we need to change those scales up a bit and really go kind of a bit more around education and inspiration for the 80% to start to do some things daily, because that might inspire their friend who has a mental illness to pick up some of those skills too. So I think it all starts with us and just taking that responsibility ourselves.
Coops, it's been a pleasure, man.
My man.
Thank you, brother.
We did it.